We present the News Quiz with your host, Susan Kalman.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a correction from Veja magazine in Brazil, read by Susan Ray.
We would like to clarify that the politician Eduardo Jorge likes to spend his free time reading Tolstoy, not Toy Story, as was originally reported.
Our thanks to Dorothy Rank for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Hugo Rifkind and comedian Jade Adams. And opposite them on my left, comedian Jen Brister and Mark Steele. Hugo, which MPs are openly revolting?
Oh, well, all of them. But I think you probably mean... Right, so there's this group in the Conservative Party called the ERG, the European Research Group, and they're like the hard Brexiters. They're ruled by Jacob Rees-Mogg, which is like a terrifying vision of the future for us all. And this week they had a big meeting on how they might get rid of the Prime Minister, get rid of Theresa May and replace her. This was first revealed by Robert Peston, of the other place. And he tweeted, 50-odd MPs were at this meeting. And I thought it's typical MSM bias to not even mention the ones who aren't odd. But then I thought there probably weren't any who weren't odd. So that was probably why. But there was this meeting with all the MPs, and they were there making statements such as, you know, sort of thinly veiled criticisms like, she has to go, and she's a disaster, and this can't go on, and oh my God, I want to kill myself. And things like that. And people got really excited that this might be the precursor to a leadership election, because what they need to do is they need to get 48 letters calling for a leadership election into the chairman of the Conservative Party, and then there has to be one. But then afterwards, Rees-Mogg piped up himself and said, no, you know what, it's not a rebellion. We're just contributing, we're just criticising. He said, his exact words were, even Jesus had disciples who were disgruntled, which... which he probably meant to be reassuring, but, you know, you think... I mean, they did kind of nail Jesus to a cross a bit, didn't they? And then I got thinking, well, how far does this go? Like, who's Judas here? And who's the cock who has to crow three times? And I thought, surely Boris Johnson is a cock. But the fact is, there's not going to be a leadership election, I don't think. And the reason for that is, although these Tory rebels don't like what Theresa May is doing over Brexit with the Chequers deal, they have, like, no idea what they'd do instead. They said they were launching their proposals for a lot of this stuff, particularly for the Irish border. And everybody was quite excited to see what their proposals were. But Owen Paterson, who was one of this group and the former Northern Ireland secretary, said beforehand, there's nothing new in here, it's actually quite boring. So no one was that excited after that. And in a nutshell, they're sticking with Theresa May because 2 years after a referendum, although they don't like what she's saying, they have no idea what they do instead.
Right.
So we're all screwed.
Great. It's always good to know everything's in a good state, isn't it? Theresa May... the plot to bring her down. What do you think, Jane?
I mean, I've never seen anyone cling to power in quite the same way as Theresa May is currently doing. She's like a germ, isn't she, in a toilet bowl. That, you know when you get the bleach and you're just putting it into the toilet and you're scrubbing and scrubbing and it doesn't move? She's like that 1% that Domestos can't get rid of.
Isn't the problem that if Theresa May goes, what are you left with?
The Tory party don't seem to realise that she is actually the best person for the job. That is the tragedy.
They don't care, do they? Boris is all sort of, oh, let me take over. I don't know what I'm going to do, something or other. I'll be there on a Monday or something and I might have to come back on a Wednesday and I've got some carrots in the fridge or something like that, but that's sort of do it. And then exactly as Hugo says, well, what are you going to do about if you're going to do something? I don't know, we'll have a plan. And then wasn't it the Ireland thing, which I don't understand at all? They said, well, we're going to have the border 5 miles away from the border. That then becomes the border. Oh, yep, you spotted the floor. Never mind, she's got to go and we'll take over. Whereas, I actually think Labour's policy, I really like Labour Party's policy on Europe, because I think it chimes in with the country. Because the Labour Party policy on Europe is... Complicated, isn't it? Right.
Well, Jade, what do you think of all this shenanigans with the Tory party?
Well, the only thing I thought was I saw the word plot, a plot to overthrow her, and it's not really the gunpowder plot, is it? It's not secret. It's almost like they've put a passive-aggressive note on a big fridge that everyone else can read to try and get rid of her. She knows no one likes her. She doesn't care.
I felt very sorry for Theresa May dancing on television, because it's not easy, right? And everyone was having a go at her, and I was like, you try and cha-cha in South Africa or where... It's difficult, isn't
it? You're very rhythmical, though, Susan Kalman.
Thanks very much.
She is not. She looks like she's having a fit.
How you dance meant to be a reflection of what you're like in the bedroom.
You see, in my defence, like when I started doing all that, Hugo, you can, and Susan, we do something called Scottish social dancing, Scottish country dancing.
I wondered where you were going
with
that.
Which is specifically designed to prevent sexual interaction. That's the point. I mean, you might take your cardigan off if it gets a bit warm, but that's all. So I was faced with... and maybe I'm not good. Anyway, so, great. This is the news of an alleged plot to oust Theresa May, with sources saying that around 50 Conservative MPs of the European Research Group, or ERG, met this week to discuss a way to remove the Prime Minister. The ERG is not to be confused with an ECG, which of course requires someone with a heart to be present. In order to actually get rid of Theresa May, Conservative MPs need 158 votes, or they need to watch BBC One's Bodyguard with a notepad and pen. Have you seen it? It's amazing. What's in the briefcase? I can't hold my water. It's amazing. Oh, and it's a bit sexy. So... Also this week at PMQs, Jeremy Corbyn wore a wheat lapel badge in support of Britain's farming industry. Although standing in front of Theresa May with wheat pinned to your chest is very much like waving a red rag at a bull. 2 points to Hugo. Jade, who can't wait for the weekend?
Oh, this is the trade union Congress who are saying that we could eventually have a four-day week, and saying that this might be possible because of certain robotic advances that we're all taking. I suppose what I thought about this was it depends what type of job you're wanting to have a four... Like, if you have a job which is like, of course, if you're a masseuse and you're massaging old fat men, then yes, a four-day week would be in your advantage. I met a vegan taxidermist recently. It's just a girl at a comedy gig. I asked her what her job was, and she really proudly went, "I'm a vegan." And I went, "That's not your job, because that's what vegans are like." She went, "No, I'm a vegan taxidermist." And I said, "I think you've shot yourself in your own foot." The other thing I was thought of is there are like comedians on this table, and we were all shocked that there were actually 4 days in the week.
Yeah.
Because we just thought there were just two nights and two evenings. I didn't know that there was the rest of the week.
Sometimes there are things like bank holidays. There are extraordinary things that as comedians is daylight as well, which I've never seen.
They're trying to replace us with robots. Now, I've got one of those things that cleans your carpet when you're not in the house. Now, mine steals money from me. Mine had at least 30 quid in it recently. That I shouldn't really be throwing money out of my pocket, but sometimes it just comes... I don't take a wallet, I'm really unorganised, but I came home and it was full of my own money. I think this is the start of something really scary. So I think, like what Elon Musk said, I think we all need to hold off on this robotic thing and just chill out and stop being lazy. That's what I think about that.
Does your Hoover go down clubbing with other Hoovers? That have been Look what I took off my owner. I've no idea how they talk.
It happens to me, because as soon as I step through the front door, I take my trousers off, because I feel...
your own front door?
Just my front door. I feel constrained by trousers. I don't like having hot legs. And,
well, unfortunately,
you can't
Susan.
See what's underneath this table, can you?
I'm definitely wearing trousers.
Unfortunately, we all know you have hot legs. We saw it on telly.
So you take them off, and then your change goes everywhere, and then you can't be bothered picking it up, and so there's money everywhere. So, anyway, what do you think? 4 days.
I love the idea of a four-day week. I think that sounds great. I don't know how it's going to impact on someone that's self-employed, like myself. You know, I mean, I don't really understand how I'm going to get paid if I don't turn up, you know, like tonight. I mean, I'm not, you know, Miles Jupp.
Extra point to Jane.
What upset me about this was they were saying... Look, their plan is for the four-day week. They're saying by the end of the century, we could be working a four-day week. And it's like, by the end of the century, I'm going to be 113. I better be bloody working a four-day week, at most.
I just think, I don't know, Mark, what do you think? I think it's, I mean, it sounds nice, but it is the reality that people could earn enough money and talk about robotics. Is this a possibility?
Well, it depends what sort of job you do. Obviously, if you shouldn't have to do really boring, even call centres and things. I remember one of this sort of, I did used to do this in an office, and I'd think, oh, God, right, I'm going to look at the clock again. Oh, no. Oh, please, please let it be 5 to 1. Please let it be 5 to 1. Then I've only got 5 minutes to lunch. Oh, I can use one of them 5 minutes going to the toilet. Oh, please don't let it be 1/4 to 1. I won't survive 1/4 of an hour. Please, please. Right, here we go. I'm going to look at the clock. Here goes. 9:10. I think if you're in a job like that,
yeah,
even a 2-day week is probably...
This is the claim from TUC's General Secretary, Francis O'Grady, that if businesses are forced to share the benefits of new technology with their workforce, then a 4-day working week may be possible this century. The TUC has called on the government to take action to help people work less but get paid the same, which until now has just been called being a man. According to the TUC, 1.4 million people now work a full 7 days a week in the UK. Judging by my TV, about half of them are Keely Hawes. And quite rightly, she's a national treasure. Everybody stand. 2 points to Jade. Jen, why are many policemen not laughing?
OK, so this story is about the fact that the government, having disregarded all of the research from a particular white paper, are not giving the police a 3% pay rise, which I think is weird for a party that sort of sold themselves on Law and Order. You have to wonder if they actually meant the TV show Law and Order, not actually the nuts and bolts of policing. Cressida Dick, the chief... I'm sorry, but that is funny. If you don't find Cressida Dick funny, there's something wrong with you. She said that the increase of 2% was a punch in the nose, to which Sajid Javid replied, "No, Your Honour, she hit her nose on the van."
What do we think? Should we not be giving the police a pay rise?
Well, they said... So they're giving them 2%, and Cressida Dick said, "This feels like 1% to our officers," which I thought was just this immensely troubling statement that it is 2%, but to the officers it feels like 1%. And I was thinking, I'm not sure maths should be something you do by feeling. Is it like when you felt it really was the Birmingham Six? Is that what's happening? But I thought when I was thinking about this as well, it's weird how that's changed, because like once that would have been like a lefty joke to mock the police, whereas now... You know, everything shifted. You had, in the last election, you had Jeremy Corbyn arguing passionately against police cuts, that the police should have more money, and the Tories trying to take money from the police. And everything's kind of sort of backwards. It used to be the police were the kind of, you know, the soldiers in the sort of the vanguard of the establishment, you know, and now they're the foot soldiers of the revolution. You used to be able to mock them as the oppressor, and now you pay them at the weekend to paint your fence. It's like, you know, the world, it's all just changed enormously.
No, it's very odd, yeah. 30 years ago, if someone was on a demonstration and they'd be shouting Thatcher's boot boys at the cops, and now on a demonstration, the cops would be saying to the demonstrators, "Go on, chuck a brick." "Go on, what's the matter with you? Call that a demonstration. Hit me."
This is the story that the government will be awarding police a 2% pay rise instead of the recommended 3%. The move was criticised by Metropolitan Police Chief Cressida Dick, who's gone through her whole life with that name. So you know that girlfriend's someone you don't want to mess with, right? Okay. The relatively low pay makes it hard to retain officers, some of whom are forced to use stop and search measures just to see if anybody has any spare change. At least the police funding crisis finally explains why Luther is always wearing the same clothes. Now, I don't know about you, but that annoys the hell out of me, because he's obviously a detective inspector or something. He earns at least £40,000 to £45,000 a year, and he only has one jacket. And I don't know why I'm saying this on Radio 4, but it really upsets me, and sometimes I shout and throw things at the television, and that is my want. I pay my TV licence. 2 points to Jen. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Jade have 4 points, and Jen and Mark have 5 points. We start round two with an online review of a taxidermy course.
I
I always wanted to do taxidermy, and I have never encountered a teacher as talented and patient as Suzette. Mounting a guinea pig was one of the most fulfilling experiences. I've ever had.
Thanks to Ian Baker Hellings in Pembrokeshire for sending us that. Jen, why has there been a racket at the US Open?
Yes, this is the story of the umpire strikes back. It's the story of Serena Williams and the US Open final, where the umpire has been criticised for his behaviour towards her. I think the issue here was, I think it was the inconsistency in terms of how umpires rule on the tennis court. And the feeling was that Serena Williams was treated differently to, say, how Djokovic had been treated earlier on in that very same tournament. And I think there was a sort of an inconsistency of how players are penalised by umpires. And I get that, because in terms of disciplining, I'm quite inconsistent with my children, actually. Because, you know, one day I'll let them watch 4 hours of CBeebies, and the next day I'll be smashing their iPads against an expensive piece of antique furniture I picked up from a thrift shop in Notting Hill.
She was being direct, and that's something that women, I would say, over my life, my mum's especially someone that's not struggled with it, but learning to not be passive aggressive and not go around the back of the person that's upset you, to be able to stand in front of the person that's upset you and say, you are doing something that I don't like you doing, and not to get angry and not to be hysterical, but literally learn how to be direct. And I think that is what she was doing in that situation, and I think that's very important in today's society, is to learn how to be direct without needing anyone else's approval behind
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, I think that's right. And I think, I mean, when I have to complain, I just turn into my mother now, because she's very direct. I was at the Fringe, and I was trying to pick up a card for something like that, and there was a young man in the box office, and he was picking his nose. And I said, "Do you have the card?" And he shrugged. And before it was just a gut thing. I went, "There's no need to shrug at me, young man." And I thought, oh, God. So whenever I have to stand up for myself, I just channel my primary school teacher mother, and it comes out just the right tone of voice.
I was looking back at some of the McEnroe footage, because I remember when I was a kid, he used to sort of lose it on a regular basis. It's funny, he was treated much the same, but behaving far worse. It's amazing how he used to behave on tennis courts. He was sort of shrieking and shouting. Mm-hmm. And you can watch it all on YouTube. It's this sort of constant stream of meltdown. So what I don't understand about people when they do this is, like, I've never seen the game, either a tennis match or a football match, where someone loses it and shouts at the umpire or the referee and it works. And the referee goes, "You know what, you're right. I'll put it away. I'm sorry. Carry on."
I think that, because I do watch a lot of tennis, and I've seen Djokovic, he's brilliant once. He smashed at Wimbledon, and he just smashed his racket, boof, boof, until it split in two, and then carried on and was brilliant and won, and he just, nothing happened. If that was Serena. And Murray, I mean, I utterly, utterly adore Andy Murray, but he had brilliant tantrums, usually against himself. "Oh, I'm injured. Oh, I'm no good. I'm injured. Now look what I've done. My knee's gone and my back's gone and, oh, my God, and now my lips hurt and my eye hurts, and it turns out that I'm a woman trapped in a man's body."
Don't you dare applaud that. Andy Murray is my future husband. Don't you dare.
I will be marrying Andy Murray.
Does your wife know?
I met Judy Murray. I met her on three occasions, and the last time I met her, I plucked up the courage to say, "I hope to marry your son, and you'll be my mother-in-law." And she looked genuinely terrified. And I was just like, I was like, "Don't you think it'd be really great, like at Christmas and stuff, you know, me and you and Andy?" And she kind of went, and ran away. I just think Andy Murray is just, he's sexy and he's a feminist and he's...
I'd marry him.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say I'd marry you.
I would marry you, but only if Andy Murray turned me down.
Yeah.
Wedding's off.
I've never met him. I've never met Andy Murray, and I'm glad I haven't, because I just... It's like, I think I would find it quite difficult to control myself. Like,
do you think the reason why you've not met him is that his mother is keeping you away from him?
This is the fallout from the US Open final, where Serena Williams was beaten in straight sets by Naomi Osaka, during which she was docked a game for verbal abuse, having already had a point penalty for smashing her racket and a code violation for coaching. It has been pointed out that male tennis players have traditionally got away with comparable bad behaviour. Tim Henman was known to slurp his barley water quite aggressively at times. And of course, Andre Agassi once accidentally bit the head off a live ball boy. Bursts of rage are quite common in tennis, as anyone who's seen me having to queue half an hour for an £8 glass of Prosecco can attest, and that's not actually true. Because what you do is you just take the foil bit out of a wine box, right, and you sellotape it to your naked skin. Because when they do the pat-downs, they can't go under the clothes. So if it's there, they can't get you, and then you put two straws down your arms like you're the Ghostbusters. 2 points to Jane. Mark, have a listen to this. You saw the whole of the moon. The whole of the moon. You were there in the turnstiles with the wind at your heels. You stretched for the stars and you know how it feels to reach too high, too far, too soon. Mark, who is completely over the moon?
Oh, that's very good, over the moon. He's, it was this... Oh, I can't remember his name. As an astronaut...
Frank Borman.
And he was on Apollo 8. So there we are. So only, you know, getting, three before the one that went... where they landed on the moon. All very exciting at the time. Human beings actually going round the moon in sort of 1967, whenever it was. And he's just done an interview now, aged 90, I believe, in which he said that he actually had no interest in space. I think his exact words were, "I really couldn't stand space." That's something a kid would say. "I don't like space. Come on, we're going to space. I hate space." So he really didn't...
He hated it.
And that's... Which, in fact, although he's 90, he sounds like quite a modern, I think, modern... My son, I could imagine, you know, if he said, "Oh, you've got a chance to go to the moon," he'd go, "Is Renando's." "I'm going to go up there for it. I've got Wi-Fi. I can't get WhatsApp. What am I going to the moon for?"
One of the strangest things about this... So this guy went into space on the Apollo 8... And it's one of the most depressing stories I've ever read, in a way, because he said when he arrived home, he didn't even talk about the experience with his wife or family, who also seemed rather indifferent to the whole space thing. The poor guy's gone to space, and he's come home and everyone's like, "Aye, right."
What was the weather like, dear?
Where's he from? He sounds like he's got a Bristolian family.
If you went to space, would your family be similarly?
They literally don't know what I do with my life. I said to my brother recently, he's an electrician. I said to him, I was like, why don't you come and watch me do gigs? You know, it's going really well at the moment. And he said, "Well, you don't watch me do electrics, do you?"
I mean, he has a point.
My favourite thing about the moon, though, seeing as you ask, is the Russians, during the space race, built these special bombs for the moon. And what they are is they're these sort of metal balls that they fired at the moon that are made up of lots of tiny flags. And they hit the moon and exploded, scattering flags everywhere. And it's kind of like pretending they'd been there. Flag bombs. Amazing.
Is that true?
I think so.
Jen, moon...
Frank Borman, he sounds like a sort of a northern club comic from the 70s, isn't he?
"Oh, I went to the moon, it was over the moon, oh, but got there, no atmosphere, oh, smash me helmet on Uranus, hey, I'm here all week, ha-ha."
I read that he said, I wanted to go after 30 seconds and just go home. I mean, it's quite a long way to, like, go and just go, "I was bored after 30 seconds and I want to go home." He should have just joined a gym.
I just think it's, you know, if you've got to go to space... We never usually ask the newsreaders, but I want to ask you, Susan. Would you like to go to space, Susan?
No.
And that's why we never ask the newsreaders.
she does. Anything. Thanks for joining in, Susan. This is retired astronaut Frank Borman, who took part in the first ever mission to orbit the moon in 1968, and who has this week described the experience as boring and said that he really isn't interested in space. The Borman family are notorious for finding the drudgery in unusual working environments. Frank's brother Alan, for instance, he was the Marquis de Sade's diary secretary for 3 years and said, in the end, it was just another admin job. Having been part of the first manned spacecraft to safely orbit the moon and return home, Borman said he was unmoved by the whole experience and found space to be a black, featureless void before someone pointed out he had his helmet on backwards. 2 points to Mark. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Mark.
Well, this comes from Rosie Hunter, who saw this description of a laptop for sale on eBay. This computer has no hard drive and the on-off switch is stuck. Otherwise, it's in perfect working condition.
Jen.
This is from Ed Saddington, who saw this notice in the kitchen of his Hampshire church. Please rinse teapots after use, then stand upside down in the sink.
Hugo.
Nick Partington sent this in and he heard it on a Radio 5 news report. A couple from London have toasted the birth of their second child using 19-year-old defrosted sperm.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Jade have 8 points, but this week's winners are Jen and Mark with 9 points. Before we leave you, here's an extract from the front page of a local parish magazine sent in by Henry Garthwaite.
In this issue, we bring the news that Canon Mackenzie is to retire, and the hymn of the month is Give Me Joy in My Heart.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkin, Jade Adams, Jen Brister and Mark Steele. In the chair was Susan Kalman and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by Clint Edwards, John Hunter and Sarah Morgan, with additional material by Sarah Gibbs and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.